You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Welcome
to Theater Geeks Anonymous,
the podcast about Broadway flops, scandals, and new work.
Now, we'll take a break from our usual episodes to bring you this intermission-sode.
Intermission-sode. I could just go all night.
I know.
But I won't. Because I haven't warmed up.
Hey, theater geeks. It's a new, we just finished a theater season, a Broadway theater season.
Yeah. Yes, we did. And Tony nominations have been announced.
They have. And for those of you who are like OG back in the day, we used to do like these really funny little videos about all the nominees. We're not doing that this year because I am in another state for like a week.
I remember that.
Yeah. We did it all up until before Rona.
I think Rona changed a huge amount for everybody, but yes, especially for us.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think, you know, it's funny. And I was thinking about this the other day because my friend Juliet sent me a meme about introversion, like being an introvert. And I was like, oh, yeah, I feel seen and all that stuff. But I was like, it's true, because it's essentially like the way you recharge, because like an introvert can still be very extroverted and like talking and being very social and whatever. And the way that they charge after that kind of adventure is by going and being completely alone. You recharge your battery and then you can do it again, right? Mm-hmm. But extroverts are recharged as they are being social. So that's right. The difference between being an extrovert and an introvert. And a lot of, you know, when we were growing up, I always used to just think that introverts were really shy and they didn't want to talk and they didn't want to be social at all. So I was like, oh yeah, of course I'm an extrovert. But as I've gotten older, I've come to understand about myself that I'm an ambivert, I guess is what they call them.
Yeah.
But I think I recharge in the introverted way. And I don't remember why I brought that up. Was I coming up with a point there?
Well, because we're talking about Rona and how things change for everyone. Yeah.
Thank you. So as I was thinking about that meme that she sent me, I was like, you know, I don't think that I really fully realized that about myself until the shelter in place. Yeah. Because for a lot of people, being sheltered and isolated like that was really, really difficult and challenging. And I, in an empathetic way, can see that.
Right.
For me, it was lovely. I loved being on my own in my apartment with just the dogs. It was so nice. And it was really a way, you know, because like vacation can really only get you so much as far as like recharged and balanced again. But there was something about that 4 weeks of being sheltered in place that I was like, okay, I can do this. Like I can do the next 40 years now because I had a break.
Yeah. Yeah. No, same. My roommate had showed me this meme about INFJs, which I am. And so it broke down how each person on the Myers-Briggs, like how they got through shelter in place. And for INFJs, it said they don't feel bad for not wanting to be around people because they don't have to be, like they're off the hook. And I was like, that is me.
Yeah.
You know, because like I don't, there was nobody like asking me to do something. And then I'm like tired and like, because I have a lot of extroverted friends and I am like very not an extrovert. Like I'm very not.
Yeah.
And so, I would often feel badly because like, you know, and so, Rona really changed that because now I'll book things with people, but like I give myself space in between the things, right? And it's funny now, people will be like, oh, you must be really busy. And I just don't answer because it's like, no, I need to not be around people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's funny too, because I remember when I first got Sweet Pea,
Yeah.
And I had kind of this built-in excuse. I didn't realize I even wanted an excuse until I had one to use. And then I was like, oh my God, I don't have to go out anymore. Like,
you know, there's this meme that I saw a month ago that was like, it wasn't a meme, it was a video. And over the video, it was like, when you go out into the public and the public has a nerve to be out there.
Oh, I feel that so hard.
But, and it's like all this to say that like what changed for us is being able to like do this on Zoom. And so because like we now we're like, oh, duh, we can record no matter where either of us are.
Yeah.
It's just like we also just don't always plan to like do the videos in the ways that like we had before Rona. So. Yeah,
I so there won't feel be like any little sometimes with that social media stuff, it can feel like such an obligation too. It just kind of it sucks all the fun away. So I always feel like, you know, the more organically something can happen, the more fun it can be. So I don't I don't sweat that anymore.
Yeah. But they were fun to do. They were fun. They were. And I thought they were like super they cute. Cracked me up. They were super cute. They were really cute. All right, y'all. So yeah, on Tuesday, the 2023 Tony nominations came out, and we're not going to go like a super deep dive on like every single one that was announced. But we are just going to talk about like some of the key ones and, the ones that we saw, like some of these we saw together, some we didn't. One we're going to see together in a couple of weeks. So we'll get to tell you all about that.
Yes. So excited about that.
Yeah. It's going to be great. And then, we'll, you know, also like just talk a little bit about how we felt about this season, overall. So let's start with Best Play.
Okay.
So Best Play, nominations went to Ain't No Mo, which was written by Jordan E. Cooper, Between Riverside and Crazy, written by Stephen Adley Gurgis, Cost of Living, written by Martina Mayok, Fat Ham by James, James Lil James.
Yeah, that's how I would pronounce it.
And Leopoldstadt by Tom Stoppard. I saw three of the five.
You saw Leopoldstadt, right?
Yep, I saw Leopoldstadt. I think actually I might have seen Cost of Living first.
Okay.
Then I saw Leopoldstadt. And then the last one of the three that I saw was Between Riverside and Crazy.
Oh, I thought you saw Ain't No Mo too.
No, I wanted to.
Oh, okay.
But it was like the last 2 weeks it was on I think that was the time like I was gone for Thanksgiving.
Gotcha. Oh, boo.
And then it closed. I really did want to see Ain't No Mo, but I didn't get a chance to.
Yeah, I sent you a text yesterday or maybe the day before of a TikTok of Fat Ham that showed up. It was truly amazing to me. Okay, like so this it started it's just a video of the stage show being done, but it's just one little scene where I am assuming he's the lead character. He's the protagonist that we follow is going to be singing a karaoke song for like a family barbecue. And so he gets up on stage and he pushes play on his iPhone. And the music that starts is Radiohead's I'm a Creep. And the way that they accomplish this is so funny and also so poignant because it like really shines a spotlight on the fact that he feels othered even within his own family.
Yeah.
I don't know much about it. I imagine that he is maybe queer or maybe.
Yes, he is.
Okay.
Yes.
So and he's also very alternative in the way that he looks and styles himself. Yeah. So it's a very far departure from the rest of his family. But like he starts this song and his mom is like, like she's like that's my baby and I just it was so sweet but then every other family member was just like no what are you singing this is whole like it's so good though I did send you the video
I want to see it I want to see that play really I really want to see that
I mean
play.
After seeing that scene I was just like oh that looks so good
When I went to see Riverside and Crazy, I met this usher, and she had gone twice when it was at the Public. She loved it so much. She was like, "Have you seen Bad Am?" And I was like, "No, I didn't get to it yet." And she's like, "I went twice. Don't you go see Off Broadway?" I was like, "Yes, but like, I literally can't see everything. Like, I just, there's not time to see absolutely everything, you know." And I was like, "It's transferring to Broadway, so it's like I have time." Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's like, I really want to see it. It is I don't know if adaptation is the correct term, but it's, I guess in a way it is like of Hamlet.
Okay. That's right. What,
so it's
like a
reinterpretation of Hamlet, with, you know, a queer, man as the protagonist. It looks like it is brilliant, and it really want to see it.
The staging was beautiful. Yeah. The lighting was really effective.
Yeah.
And it was a musical number within a play, which I'm a huge fan of. Yeah. So it was just really great.
Yeah. This list is like, I think we mentioned before, but I was most excited for this season of plays. I was much more excited about the plays.
I remember you telling me that.
Mm-hmm, than the musicals. And so I'm going to go ahead and talk about, I believe, the best revival of a play.
Okay.
Best revival of a play, A Doll's House, by Amy. New version is by Amy Herzog. August Wilson's The Piano Lesson. The Sign in Sidney Brustein's Window, which we have an episode that we did. And this was written by Lorraine Hansberry. And Susan Laurie Park's Top Dog Underdog. I did get to see, out of these, the only one I've seen so far and is closed now, is Top Dog Underdog.
Okay.
I'd never seen it before. I didn't know much about it except the fact that it was about these two brothers. And it has stuck with me in the most visceral way. I cannot tell you. And I saw it in, it's like October, November, and it's like May. And it's stuck with me. It is a really good piece.
Can you give us an idea of what it's about?
So it is. It's about these two brothers named Lincoln and Booth.
Oh, is it like a Cain and Abel type story then?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And so, and they're half brothers, and they were abandoned quite young by their parents. And you come to discover throughout the course of the play exactly how they were abandoned. And they were given, they call it an inheritance, but you discover also like how they were given this money that they have, this like little bit of money. And they're living in very dire straits. And one of the brother whose name is Lincoln, is actually like, he dresses in whiteface and goes to and works as he's like playing Lincoln, and people shoot him. That's like his job.
Okay.
And so throughout the course of this play, he mentions the Lincoln, that brother, he mentions that he asked his father one time why he named them Booth and Lincoln. And he said he thought it was a funny joke, which is extremely dark.
Yeah.
But Susan Laurie Parks, her writing is just so brilliant.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's like equal parts very funny and touching and sad, you know? Mm-hmm. But it's like, you know, she's dealing with the issues of like Black men in America and the ways in which systemic racism and also you know, like the ways that like parental choices and how all of these things affect us as we grow up and as we try to navigate through the world. And it's heart-wrenching. And I'm telling you, it was like, it's not left me since I saw it.
Wow.
It's a very good play.
But it's not running anymore?
No, no. I saw it like the last weekend. It was opened. It closed okay. the week before the piano lesson. It was in.
Okay. Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was in the fall. So that was really good. I wanted to see the piano lesson.
Yeah.
I love August Wilson.
I do.
But
too.
On the upside of that, yeah. like I missed it, but it is going to be a movie with the same cast.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So now, Danielle
is it
going to
be a movie like of the stage version like they've done before? Or is it going to be like.
I know they did a capture of it.
Okay.
But my understanding is it's going to be. You know, like Fences was, right?
Okay, yeah.
So it's produced by Denzel Washington because he has this pledge to do film versions of August Wilson's entire canon. Like
awesome.
he wants to do that. And so Fences was the first one, and then he's gonna do the piano lesson with yeah. the cast. So it'll be Samuel Jackson, Danielle Brooks, his son John David Washington. And so I'm not sure exactly when that's coming out. I do think it's like, I think sometime at the end of this year, maybe the beginning of 24. But so, you know, if you missed it like me and you wanted to see it, friends, it's going to be a movie.
Awesome.
So, and that's a really, and the interesting piece of that is like, it's also about inheritance.
Oh.
It's also about inheritance and systemic racism and these issues that we, like, what does inheritance actually mean? And what are the things that we are inheriting, right? Because it's not mm-hmm. only about monetary things, and it's not right. only about tangible things and legacy and everything. Also, this revival was directed by Samuel L. Jackson's like Tony Award winning wife, LaTanya Richardson Jackson. Nice. So I'm like really pissed I missed it because I was like also really excited about that.
Is she going to be directing the movie?
I don't believe so. I believe okay. they announced the director and I don't believe it was her. Okay. And then A Doll's House, I haven't seen yet. It's gotten like all of my friends who've seen it, they've loved it. They've absolutely loved it. And then I am absolutely going to see The Sign in Sydney Brustein's Window. Like I have to go see it. We talked about it.
Yes.
It doesn't get done very often. I have no idea if this will ever happen again in our lifetime because it like, so it's, I'm going to see it. The, I was able to, before we did our episode of The Sign in Sydney Brustein's Window, I was able to see a reading by a theater company that, to my understanding, is no longer doing shows, or at least aren't for right now. They did a reading of it. And that was like the first time I was able to, you know, not like, like hear it in its entirety.
Yeah.
And it's, I think I've said this before, there are several pieces that have been produced recently on Broadway and off Broadway that are specifically around the experiences of Jewish people. And it's wonderful and timely because we do have a real major issue happening around anti-Semitism.
Yes.
And it's like really terrifying how bad it is right now. And so
we're following along the lines of all of the history that we should have remembered, but isn't being taught anymore.
Right. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, it's absolutely true. And that, you know, that brings me back to Best Play, Leopoldstadt, which I saw. And that piece is very educational because what it does is it follows a family from the late 1800s all the way up through the 1950s. So you do see what happens to them during World War II and how that affects future generations.
Yeah.
So that's a great piece. It's still open. It's coming towards the end of its run, but it did do its full run, which is really incredible. And it's a huge cast. It's really a huge, yeah.
Wow.
It's like a really large cast, which is very rare anymore for a play to have.
No kidding.
But that was a really moving piece of theater that I got to see. I also saw that in the fall. And then Cost of Living. I'm breathing like that because there are so few plays about the experiences of individuals who have all different types of disabilities.
Mm.
And like, I went to the theater and it was like so empty.
Oh.
And it was so frustrating.
Yeah, that's a shame.
Because I'm like, especially now that, you know, with COVID-19, and now we have all like millions more people who are immunocompromised.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's like, I just feel like we're never want to think about the fact that at any moment something could happen and any one of us could be disabled. I like, and this play is really like, not all of these people were born with these different, you know, disabilities. Like,
okay,
there, then some of the stories is an accident happened and they were ended up wheelchair bound, or and then the actors actually they did have disabilities. So it wasn't the actor pretending to have one,
right?
They actually all did, right?
Oh man.
So that was a great play. It's a Pulitzer Prize winning play. It's very good.
Yeah. Awesome.
And I'm really, really glad that I was able to see that as well before it closed.
Because that's a revival too, right?
Off Broadway. But it like it was here. That's why you're like, this sounds familiar, because it was here.
Okay.
Please, geeks, let me know if I'm wrong. But so between Riverside and Crazy was off Broadway twice.
Oh.
Same actor playing the lead.
Wow. How far apart?
It was like, I want to say a year apart.
Okay. But it was,
yeah, something like that. And after I saw it come up the second time, I was like, it's absolutely coming to Broadway. Like, I just knew it was.
Yeah.
And then, of course, Rona happened. It was like several years. Nothing was announced. And then towards the when Broadway started to come back, it got announced, and I was like, you know, and so I the lead actor in that, Stephen McKinley, is nominated for Best Actor. And I'm like, that Best Actor, we're going to get to that. Best Lead Actor in a Play. That is a tough category.
Really? I haven't even looked that far ahead yet.
Holy crap. I mean, it's really tight.
No.
I don't know who's going to take it home. That's absolutely the tightest category.
Though, because I feel like the last few years, it's been like, it's going to be that person, or it's going to be between those two. But that's kind of nice that we've got so much really awesome competition.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a really, it's anybody's guess what that one's going to be. Anybody's guess.
Yeah.
All right, so let's go to musicals.
Yeah, yeah.
Best New Musical, And Juliet, Kimberly Akimbo, New York, New York, Shucked, and Some Like It Hot.
Okay, I did not even know that New York, New York was on Broadway again.
Yeah.
Or was on Broadway.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't even realize that until just this second.
Well, to be fair, in your defense, it was one of those that opened like a day or two before the cutoff.
Oh.
You know how they are, where it's like a barrage of shows opens like 1 or 2 days before the cutoff so it can get in the season. And that's 100% why you were like, I didn't even know this was a thing, because it's been open for like a week.
Yeah, okay. Then I don't feel as bad.
No.
I have not seen this, but my coworker has Shucked, and she said that, well, first she saw it when it was in previews, and I can't remember where, maybe in Texas she saw it.
Okay.
But she just saw it again on Broadway and said that there are definitely some changes that have occurred, but for the better. Like, it's a really good show, she said. She said it was really funny.
So the trajectory of that show is like, she's right. It's different. And it might even, I know that it changed even from that production, because it was originally the Hee Haw musical.
Oh.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, technically, you and I shouldn't even be old enough to know what that means.
I know. It's like, I definitely never watched that show, but I like know it was a thing that happened, you know? And so like, I was like, I'm not interested in a hee-haw musical. So I'm very glad that they did a hard pivot.
Yes.
And you know, yeah, same. Like I've heard from several fans that they really like it. And I'll be frank, I did not expect this show to be good. I saw a huge, I was like, why is your marketing ploy corn?
See, I'm literally
never going to see, I don't care about.
Oh, and see, I disagree completely because I saw that and I was like, oh my God, that's hilarious. Because the name of the show is Shucked. And if you have grown up anywhere near corn, you know that that's like, it's corny. Like it's just a corny joke. And apparently also there are just corn puns throughout the entire show, which again, like I just love that. I get, as a girl that grew up in the Midwest, I can appreciate that.
That's, I'm like, it's not for me. Because I mean, my grandmother grew corn. I shucked corn. I totally knew what it meant. I knew it was corny. And that's the prop. That was the problem for me. I was like, okay. Well, but everyone I know loved it. So
listen, even if everyone you know loves it, it could be that you don't. And that is totally fine because everyone's sense of humor is different. And I like the corny stuff.
Yeah, but
that's okay. Now, one show that we both loved.
But can I say one more thing about Shucked, though?
Of course.
Is like the one reason I would go is Alex Newell.
Yeah.
I love Alex Newell. I love her so much. Amazing singer.
One of these performers, too,
amazing.
That came from absolute thin air.
Yeah.
To be this, there's not a big enough word to use for that level of talent. She is just.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's all I can say.
I know we're speechless.
And, completely. And also because she's like this chameleon too, because like she is one thing in Once on This Island, and then she's a completely different thing. You know, in another show that she, what was the TV show that she did for a while?
Oh, Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist.
Okay. So like she was a completely different person there. And now she's probably a different character completely in Shucked. It's like, she's wonderful. She's wonderful. And also she's got the intersectionality of a lot of different diversities, which makes me appreciate it even more.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because she's not what producers say that audiences go to see, and yet audiences go and see her.
Yeah. Yeah.
Period.
Well, and this is the other like thing that I do like about this show is that I recently heard that Alex was with it throughout the course of its process. And so like this character is like very much built around the fact that like Alex uses all pronouns, she, he, they, right?
Yeah.
And so to have a character sort of like built from the ground up that, you know, after it goes off, like once it closes on Broadway and is licensed, then like other individuals can like sit inside of their true identities in like this new character that's been developed. So this is another thing that I really love about this show.
That's what I mean. It is. It's wonderful. It's like for the longest time, we've been shouting to the rooftops that we want representation across all levels and all spectrums. And so now you've got this character that is built in to be femme, mask, or non-binary, all of them. And it's wonderful.
Because
everyone can be seen, like literally every single person can be seen.
Yeah.
I love that.
It's really cool. Yeah. So that's the little piece I wanted to add about. And so I'm sorry. And then you were going to move on to another show. What were you?
Well, you and I went to go see this together. Yeah. I think we talked about it the last episode, but it's a show that we both loved.
Yeah.
Kimberly Akimbo, which is also up for new best musical.
Yeah.
I don't know what I think, because it does feel like you mentioned it about best actor, but like really this category is filled to bursting with really great potential as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I really, the other thing that was like really delightful about Kimberly Akimbo was, and I pointed this out to Pamela as soon as we got in, is like, there were all these like children, you know, they were middle school and high school age coming to see the show. And like, there's something precious about them all coming to see a 60-year-old play them.
Yes.
Like, I don't know how to explain like the delight to sit in the theater and watch that and like see them enjoying this musical.
Yes.
And that like they get to experience Victoria Clark in a way that like is accessible for them right now, you know? Yeah. And so that like now they have, you know, their own sort of Broadway diva person that like she, you know, she like the work she probably had to do to, it's like, let's remember how it was for us, you know?
Well, okay. Let's see. What was I doing 50 years ago?
Yeah.
I mean, that's really, I mean, that's a huge testament to the performer that she is. Like, I love Victoria Clark. She's an amazing woman, amazing singer, amazing performer. I've loved her really in every single thing that she's done. Yeah. Right. Even Cinderella. And Cinderella is not my favorite show at all. We've had that conversation.
Yeah.
But there's something about her that is very magnetizing. Like you just can't take your eyes off of her. And so this was one of those shows too, where it's the same, like you're watching her, but you also do start to believe that she's a 16-year-old, which is really wild.
It's true.
Because she's meant to be a 16-year-old that looks 60, but you still believe that she's a 16. Like, it's so mind-blowing.
It really is, but
it's such a great show.
Yeah.
And we talked about this on the walk back to the subway afterwards too, but like the entire cast was really, I think it was the best ensemble cast I think I've ever seen in a show before. And that goes from the feature performers all the way down to the ensemble cast that understudies the leads, right? And I saw myself in a lot of the different characters too, which was also really fun. So fun.
Yeah,
that was a good one.
That was a really good show. That was great. I haven't seen... You know, I haven't seen New York, but as we stated, it's literally, y'all, I kid you not, it's been open a week and a half. So, you know, there's that. Some Like It Hot is based on the movie that most of us know. The thing that I find exciting about that is Amber Ruffin.
Oh.
I love her. And she co-wrote the book.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. And so she's up for her first Tony Award.
Okay. Oh, I love it. I love it so much. See, and that makes me want it. Like, that makes me want that show to win.
Even though we're both
I don't think it will. I don't think it will. But only because in past experience, shows like that have been based on movies from that era just don't do very well. They just don't, historically speaking.
Right. The thing I would be interested in is like, because the music is like this 1920s, and from what I've heard, like the music's amazing. So I'm very curious as to like how the like music and lyrics will fare at the Tony Awards, since those seem to be like really beautiful and incredible. But I love Amber Ruffin too. And she's such a theater nerd. Like, she's such a theater nerd. And it's just, like, wonderful to see fellow theater geeks just, like, having their little moment, you know. And
it's true.
I love that for her.
And if you don't have any experience with Amber Ruffin, she has a show called The Amber Ruffin Show. Mm-hmm. She does this segment called How Did We Get Here? In which she usually sings a song, or she does an incredibly funny monologue that is delightful. And I fall down a rabbit hole every single time she comes up on my TikTok feed, because I just have to go back and watch all of the ones I've missed so far. Like, she's just delightful. She's a delightful human being.
Mm-hmm. She really is. And then, so,
and Juliet, I have no idea about.
Yeah, it's like, so I haven't seen it. I have friends who've seen it and enjoyed it. And actually, you know, Kim Ona, who was in our Typecast. Yeah, she, there's like, it's like sort of all over social media that she had like this cool sort of strange trajectory on like being like, it was like a swing to an understudy to then like being the lead.
Oh, wow.
And so she was like the lead in And Juliet for like a month or something. It's like really a wild story. But Kim is a delightful, wonderful
so
human
talented.
Being. Yeah, she really is. All right. So best revival of a musical. We have Into the Woods, Lerner and Lowe's Camelot, Parade, Sweeney Todd, The Demon Barber of Fleet Street. I saw Into the Woods, but I didn't see the cast that opened it.
Okay.
So I saw it when Stephanie J. Block went in.
Okay.
Krista Rodriguez was in it.
Oh, I bet that was good. Which did she play?
She was Cinderella.
Oh, okay. Cinderella. Yeah, that makes sense. Okay, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And Montego Glover was playing the witch because she and Patina Miller were alternating.
Okay.
So it was like Patina would play it like Friday through Saturday and Montego would play like Monday through Thursday.
Okay. That's a gig. Give me that gig.
Right? Right? And I think it's because Patina is on a TV show.
Okay.
And so I think that's partially why that had to, yeah. And
I
then
bet both of them are amazing.
Yeah, yeah. And then your favorite, Brian D'Arcy James was it.
I love him.
I know. And he was playing the baker. And obviously Stephanie J. Block was playing the baker's wife.
I love that.
Yeah, yeah. it like they did look like they were having fun. And boy, do I love Stephanie J. Block. I mean, who doesn't?
Did I tell you my Stephanie J. Block story?
Well, tell it again, just in case I may not remember. Who knows?
All right. So years ago, when I was still going to auditions, mm-hmm. I went to an audition at Telsey & Co. Mm-hmm. And it used to be at their old location. They just had like a bathroom with two stalls at like a large enough amount of room. So like, you know, five or six girls could be in there changing. And then obviously two could go to the bathroom at the same time.
Yeah.
Well, I went to the bathroom and I flushed the toilet and the toilet made this enormous sound. Like it was like the whole toilet was going to fall off of its, you know, gasket. And I was like, oh my gosh, like it scared me. And so I made a noise while I was in the stall. And then when I came out, I saw Stephanie J. Block washing her hands. And I was like, whoa, like I made some stupid comment about how like, I almost flushed myself down the toilet or something mm-hmm. stupid like that. Right. Cause in awkward situations, that's what I do. I call attention to myself. And she kind of like, and like just like an awkward, like, oh yeah. You know, like that kind of reaction. And so I was like, oh, I'm embarrassed. And so like, I washed my hands and I left and I was sitting there and you know, just waiting for my audition time to start. Mm-hmm. And maybe 10 minutes later, she comes out into the main holding area and she comes to find me and she goes, I just heard it. I know exactly what you're talking about now. So I felt validated. But she was also like, that was when she was fully pregnant, must have been like 8 months pregnant at the time. So it was, it was exciting. That's my Stephanie J. Block story.
So sweet. Oh, love her.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I out of those nominations, that's the only one I've seen so far. Mm-hmm. But Pamela and I are going to see Parade at the beginning of June. We'll see it before the Tony Awards.
Yes.
So be able to.
I'm super excited about that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's going to be amazing.
Another one that I think has real potential is Sweeney Todd, mm-hmm. obviously.
Mm-hmm. I love Annalee Ashford, but I have said this so many times on this mm-hmm. podcast. I love her so much. She is so hysterically funny.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I'm like, as Miss Lovett, she is probably killing it.
Yes.
And I've had friends who've seen it and they were like, yes, she is. And I was like, of course she is, because yeah, she's wonderful.
Duh. Yeah, she's, yes. I mean, that it really ultimately would be the reason I went to go see it. However, yeah, I will also say that Josh Groban's voice is stunning. Mm-hmm. And I imagine that his portrayal of Sweeney Todd sounds spectacular.
Mm-hmm.
So that would also be a good reason to go see it.
And then Ruthie Ann Miles.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Who's still in it.
She is.
We're not sure that she would be.
Right. Because we're like, is she going to leave for here, Les Love? She's not. I am a little bummed. Okay. Here are the reasons why I'm a little bummed. Here's okay. I love Ruthie Ann Miles.
Yes.
And she already had Best Featured Actress in a Musical Tony Award. Like, she has that, yes, right? I would like her to get a Best Leading Actress in a Role Tony Award. And that is why I'm, like, a little bummed.
Yeah.
You know, well, because
but
she's nominated for Featured for this, which, yes, is, like, of course she is, duh.
Yeah, of course. But there'll still be time. She's,
yeah,
you know,
she's young.
She's very young. She's still, yes, she's in her prime right now. She's, yeah, like the pick of the litter as, right, far as casting is concerned. And I get it, because you said that you saw Here Lies Love and you loved it, right?
No, I have not.
Oh, you
didn't see it. I didn't see it. I haven't seen it. I'm
you were
going
just
to.
Excited about it.
Yes, okay. I was excited about it. I heard really good things about it. I now, like, this production, I know several people involved with it. And so, yeah, like, I, and then what they are doing with the theater. I mean, we shouldn't go into it because it's not this season. But y'all, it's, like, so cool. If you don't know, just look it up. You can go on TikTok, mm-hmm, you can go on Instagram. Like, they are, okay, I don't think it's too much to say they're, like, revolutionizing the way that theater is done on Broadway. I don't think it's too far-fetched to,
okay,
say that.
I'm very excited. I'm looking, yes, it up right now because you've intrigued me.
Yeah.
But I'll have to put this away so we can finish our episode.
Yeah. But I'm telling
I'll
you.
I'll look it up more. Okay.
Look it up. And you, like, you want the TikTok with Leia Salonga. That's,
okay,
what you want. Because, yeah, that's going to show you what they're doing.
Mm-hmm. Done. All right. I'll look it up as soon as we end this. I'll be like, bye, Ebony. And I'll be on TikTok.
Okay. And then Camelot. I have not seen... I don't know.
Ebony, I hate Camelot.
Do you?
I hate it so much. It's like, I know I said that I don't like Cinderella at all. Like, Camelot, I hate it.
Wow.
I hate it, mm-hmm, because it's boring, first of all. But also the story is super problematic. Like, there's, mm-hmm, nothing redeeming about any of those characters. I hate them all equally by the end. They're horrible human beings. And they're boring. So not only am I passionate about hating them, I'm also passionate about being completely bored to tears whilst watching it. And I love Philippa Sue. And
know.
I've seen some clips. And I can't remember who's playing Arthur right now, but he's got an amazing voice. Mm-hmm. I just hate that show so much.
Yeah. It's funny. It didn't. Like, to my understanding, like, I was talking to one of my friends who's a producer, and we were talking about it, and he was like, it got, like, middling reviews. Like, it wasn't, like, people are not really liking it. So I was a little surprised, but I was like,
yeah,
is it just because it's all that? Sometimes the revival category there, at least for musicals, is sticky, mm-hmm, right? Because I feel,
yeah,
like there are usually more revival plays than there are,
yes,
revival musicals. And so it gets really sticky. And sometimes what ends up happening is, like, every show that's a revival is nominated because, mm-hmm, there are only usually, like, 3 or 4, maybe 5, maybe.
Yeah.
But that's, you know, and so... It's that was, like, an interesting one for me. And I was like, is it because we just don't have that many? Is, like, that really why? And it's like, that's possible.
Maybe. I just think the thing is,
but the thing you're saying about problematic, that's all I've heard from like I've heard this a lot from people. Yeah.
It's horrible, but it's also like, if you really consider, even though it's a medieval play or in a medieval musical, it's dated.
Right.
It's a very 1960s musical set in medieval times, but it's like, you can't, I don't know. Maybe it's like the hardcore feminist in me that like hates it. That's why I hate it so much. But, and maybe that is why I hate it so much, but like, there's so much to hate about it from that point of view.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I, but like, besides that, if I put the feminist to the side and I just look at it from the rest of my point of view, it's still boring. It doesn't have music that's exciting.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's boring. And if Robert Goulet or Robert Preston? Robert Goulet. If Robert Goulet hadn't played that originally, nobody would be talking about it at all. And to be honest, here's another take. Robert Goulet, not that talented. He had a great voice, nothing else. I'm get some hate mail, aren't
this
I?
Rant.
No, I'm not. I know you guys. You all understand where I'm coming
That's
from.
That's right. Here. Totally.
He's got an amazing voice.
Right.
But there's nothing behind the eyes. Mm-hmm. And so like, it was like this very
SNL sketch. Like that SNL, you know, don't you know Goulet? Don't you know that? Do you not know this?
Oh, it's just so awful.
Mm-hmm. Like, I really have heard this a lot from several people. And yeah, I have nothing to add because, yeah. Okay. So let's talk about the category that I'm like, I don't know who's going to take this award home.
Okay.
This is, and I mentioned it earlier, best performance by an actor in a leading role in a play.
Okay.
Corey Hawkins for Susan Laurie Park's Top Dog Underdog. Sean Hayes for Goodnight Oscar. Stephen McKinley Henderson, Between Riverside and Crazy. Again, y'all, he did this play twice off Broadway. Okay, just, he's great. Okay. Yahya Abdul-Mateen II, Susan Laurie Park's Top Dog Underdog. Wendell Pierce, Arthur Miller's Death of a Salesman.
Oh, that is going to be really difficult.
Do you see what I'm saying?
I do.
It's
and you rough. Know what I love about this too is that it's so heavy with people of color.
Yeah, there's only one white person.
Yeah, it's just Sean Hayes is the only outlier, and that's amazing. Mm-hmm. So, Corey and Yahya, I'm assuming, play the two brothers in that's Top right. Dog Underdog.
That's right.
Okay,
and it's Wendell a two-hander. Pierce. Like literally, nobody else is in the play.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Oh, well, that's amazing.
Yeah.
And then Wendell Pierce, we've talked about because he was the one that had to stop them in the middle of the show and like kind of talk down a woman that had gotten really drunk and was being combative, you know, and very
He's
loud.
Like the best of humans. Yep.
The best of humans ever. Oh, and there is something about that play, Death of a Salesman, too, where you just really root for him because he is the underdog of underdogs.
Right.
So it's hard. Yeah, that is it's a difficult category. Now, obviously, I haven't seen all of these shows and I didn't see Wendell in this show, but I know of the show because my dad did it when I was a kid. So I do remember that very well. That is going to be hard, though.
It's a tough
one. Especially from just your descriptions of Top Dog Underdog. And Between Riverside and Crazy. You saw Riverside and Crazy too.
Okay. I saw the only thing in that category I haven't seen is Goodnight Oscar.
Okay.
And it's like
that was on for such a short amount of time too, right?
But it just opened. Again, it's another one that came in at the last minute. So it's been open for 2 weeks, you know?
Okay. Yep.
So that's why. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. And so the thing that makes this is the only one I'm gonna talk about because I'm just realizing it was not nominated for Best Revival of a Play, which is like really shocking to me.
Yeah.
Death of a Salesman was not in the best revival of the play category. Yeah. Yeah.
I wonder why.
I don't know. Because the thing that is quite special about this version of the play is, okay, so it was on the West End first, and it was co-directed by the woman who she directed Company that was just on Broadway last season.
Yeah.
She also did The Curious Incident of the Dog in the Nighttime.
Yes.
And then a like up and coming young Black woman as well. So they co-directed this together. And the reason for that is like what they did with Death of a Salesman is they put it, so we're looking at a Black family.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of it necessarily being about like this, you know, important still in my view, because I feel like older people who worked very hard, devoted their lives to the work that they do, have really been like given the shaft. I mean, we've seen this, and we see also now that it's really sort of reverberating in the ways that millennials and Generation Z views work and why they do their job and how long they stay places and things like that. So I think that like the story of Death of a Salesman as it was first presented to us is still quite important because it very much speaks to the ways that we all in our future generations view work and working for corporations and things like that, right?
Capitalism is not our friend.
Right. So now adding the piece onto it, right, where we're talking about a Black man and a company run by a white family. Where he's devoted 20 plus years of his life.
Yeah.
And this scene that's so, I don't know how to explain to you how like my heart was ripped out and stomped on. And also I was furious. I don't know. Except that, like, the scene that Willie goes to his boss, and his boss is, like, this younger, like, in this case, we're talking about Wendell Pierce, who's in his early 60s, and this, like, young white man who's in his 30s. And he is saying that, like, he actually, they're like cutting back his hours and they're cutting back the amount of work that he is able to do. And so Wendell's in this room with him and it's like you, the difference in how, cause I saw a lot, I've talked about Brian Dennehy's performance as Willie Loman as just like, you know, the story is like, I was a teenager. I was up at 2 o'clock in the morning. My mom was like, why are you still awake? I was like, but Death of a Salesman's on. And I just like, I've never forgotten Brian Dennehy's performance. It was like, absolutely wrecked me. It's like one of the greats.
Yeah.
But the like Wendell in that scene, and he's like basically begging for his job. And he's begging for his job. And also there's this like subtle sort of like power dynamic that you see playing out in like simple things like, you know, if something gets dropped, who's expected to pick it up? And so it like immediately also takes you, you know, way past the days of like, cause this is set in like, what is this? The '50s, I think something
I think
like
so,
that.
Yeah.
It takes you just to a period of time where, you know, you're dealing with watching Black people be so belittled and patronized. Mm-hmm. And you're dealing with like thinking about Sidney Poitier being called boy. And I like, but all of this happens in this one scene where like none of those words are particularly spoken. But like the way in which it was directed and the and Wendell's performance, it's just messed me up. And I'm not sure why it was not nominated for Best Revival, but I am thrilled that he is nominated for Best Leading actor in a play, and I mean, he's just wonderful. He was just 100%. Absolutely, yeah, wonderful. So, yeah, so that's that category, y'all. I don't know what's going to happen. I'm not predicting a daggone thing.
No. If we did a pool, I would lose. Like, there's no, I don't think anyone would win. It's so close to call.
It really is. And then we've got best performance by an actress in a leading role in the play. We have Jessica Chastain in A Doll's House, Jodie Comer for Prima Facie, Jessica Hecht for Summer 1976, and Audrey McDonald for Ohio State Murders. I only seen Ohio State Murders, Summer 1976, okay, and Prima Facie just opened. They're another one that's been in the last like 2 weeks. But Jodie won for this role. It's a one-woman show when it was on the West End last season.
Oh, cool. Okay.
And most people will know her from Killing Eve.
Yes.
And okay, she is the youngest person to, because like I think it was like by 26 or 27 she won more awards than like most people who've had a career for as long as she's been alive.
Wow.
She's an extremely decorated actor in the UK.
Nice.
And here too, because of Killing Eve.
Nice.
Yeah, Ohio State Murders, even though it was a play, it really felt like a one-woman show.
Hmm.
You had other actors, but they didn't actually talk very much.
Oh.
It was really interesting. So I'm not surprised it didn't get, no other people from that show got Tony nominations, because it was really, honestly, it was really played like a one-woman show. That's really the way that it felt. But it was,
yeah,
it's a hard story. And I mean, do I really need to say more? Like, Audrey McDonald is the most decorated theater actor in everything. Like, actually, wonderful. Quite literally, it's not a joke. She is. It's a fact.
Yeah.
So, that's it. I don't know.
I still remember hearing her for the first time in the cast recording of the revival of Carousel in 1994. She was still Audra Ann McDonald. She made an impression on me just through the recording. So I've been following her since then, and she's amazing. I love her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And she does flip back and forth between doing, straight plays, which is what this was, and musicals. And musical.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. And so best performance by an actor in a leading role in a musical. We have Christian Borle for Some Like It Hot, Jay Harrison Gee from Some Like It Hot, Josh Groban, Sweeney Todd, The Demon Barber of Fleet Street, Brian Darcy James for Into the Woods, Ben Platt for Parade, and Colton Ryan for New York, New York.
Well, I think it's safe to say who I want to win. I will also say, I don't know, Josh Groban, Christian Borle, I think both have equally good chances.
Yeah. I mean, Christian has won already.
Yes. And I will also say that Christian tends to do the same kind of shows over and over again. I'll leave it at that. So it actually might go to Josh Groban, to be honest, because his career has just been so vastly different from one show to the next.
I will offer, I think the one major departure Christian did was when he did falsettos.
Oh, yes, 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 yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I agree.
I mean, and he was, that was a crazy season for him because he was playing Willy Wonka in Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. And so it was so weird. He would do he was nominated for a Tony for falsettos, but he also had to shave his head for Willy Wonka. And so he was going around. I mean, that was such a crazy season. So I don't know, y'all. I don't know. I mean, again, we haven't seen Parade yet, but Ben Platt is That kid.
Yeah.
I think like that, I'm a little nervous to go see the show because I think he's going to rip my heart out and stomp on it. But what are you going to do?
I mean, that's why you're going to see Parade, though, right?
Right.
You're not going to have a fun night.
No. No, but
it
it's
doesn't
like,
matter who's playing it. Your heart is going to be ripped out. But I do understand where you're coming from.
Yeah. He and Christian have one.
Yeah.
Does Brian have one?
Mm.
Can you look that up?
I think he's been nominated. He's definitely been nominated.
Yeah.
Because he was nominated for Sweet Smell of Success.
Right. Right. I can't remember. Like part of me feels like he has, but I can't remember. He is working on, have you seen this? He's going to be doing the musical version of The Days of Wine and Roses. Do you know this movie?
No,
so I don't. This movie is about alcoholism. Yeah. And it was Jack Lemmon and Lord forgive me, I can't remember the name of the actress who was in it. I just recently watched it because it's like on AFI's top 100. I'd heard about it for actual decades. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, I have like time. Let me watch this movie. I need to watch this movie. And it's like, you know, again, you know, growing up with having a father who was an alcoholic, it was a fascinating portrayal of that journey. And also like for me, interesting to see like the alcoholic side of the story, because obviously like I just know my
you know your own trauma, but right. You don't know the trauma that caused that in the first place.
And so this what he's working on with Kelly O'Hara is just like really fascinating. So we'll see. Brian Darcy James, like, he picks really good work. But here's the thing that like one of my friends was saying a few years ago is that like he'll do something really incredible that's like Pulitzer Prize winning off Broadway, and then he leaves it like
to do some schmaltzy on Broadway.
Yes. And I'm like, what? Why? Yeah.
Well, you know, I'm to like, do something satisfying is wonderful, but then you also have to pay the bills.
And this is what I was just about to say is like, I was like, well, but then he gets like the lead role. Yeah. Now that I know how much it pays.
Yeah.
I'm like, bruh, he's got a wife and children. He needs the lead role. Okay. Yeah. So if it's schmaltzy, it's paying his bills.
Absolutely. Well, and the thing is, though, he's equally good in both. Like, you know what I mean? Like, yes, I think there's something about the artistic work that is being done in the smaller shows, the quote unquote smaller shows. And perhaps he's doing those so that they will be moved to Broadway.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm. There is something artistically satisfying about doing those kind of shows. But again, they don't, off Broadway does not pay the bills.
It does not pay at all.
Really?
Not
in New York.
Oh, 100%
doesn't. You might be able to pay the bills if you were living in New Mexico, but not in New York.
No. It doesn't. It really doesn't. So, yeah, but that's like a fascinating new piece of work that he's...
So I did look it up also. He's got 4 Tony noms, but no wins. So maybe this is his year.
Because he's kind of like the Kelly O'Hara of the Until She Won, you know, because she was nominated a crazy amount of times. Same thing, like poor, sweet Danny Burstein, you know, was like an insane number of times. He was like the Susan Lucci of the Tony Awards. You know, and so here we've got, you know, Brian, and it's that situation. Yeah, bless him. He's so consistently wonderful.
Yeah,
so.
Truly.
Mm-hmm.
Truly, I have no idea who Colton Ryan is or what he's done, so I can't speak to him, unfortunately.
Me neither. And again, y'all, we said New York's been open like
a second.
Yes.
So for a breath.
A breath. Like I haven't had time to like even think about going to see it yet because it just opened.
Yeah.
All right. Best performance by an actress in a leading role in a musical. Anna Lee Ashford for Sweeney Todd, The Demon Barber of Fleet Street. Sarah Bareilles for Into the Woods. Victoria Clark for Kimberly Akimbo. Lorna Courtney for En Juliet. Michaela Diamond for Parade. I feel like we've really talked. We talked about Anna Lee. I'm not going to gush anymore. You know.
And we gushed about Victoria.
We did. And then I didn't see Sarah Bareilles. So like what happened was some of the cast left. She's actually, I think she's on tour with it right now.
Oh, okay. I think you might be right, actually. Yeah.
Yeah. She's on tour with it. So like what happened was like, you know, the cast has a contract. This one, it was different because they left. It was a transfer from New York City Center. So usually contracts for Broadway last you about a year. This one was more like a 6-month type situation, not even that. And so the OG cast left. Then they had brought in a whole new cast. But then what would happen is like some people would come back, right? And so that's why I got to see Brian, because Brian left for a little while. And then Stephanie J. Block and her husband, Steven, were playing the baker and the baker's wife together. And they did that for like a month. And then Brian and then Steven left because I think he is on a TV show or he had other work. And then Brian popped in back in.
Okay.
So, but I didn't see Sarah. I missed her. And then I haven't seen and Juliet. So okay. I haven't seen Lorna, but
no,
that is the part that Kim played, which I, you know, I didn't see, but I do have friends who saw.
Okay.
And they really like that show.
I've heard amazing things about Michaela Diamond. I'm excited to see her in Parade.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm really excited to see her as well. And I hear like that show's really great.
Yeah.
Best performance by an actor in a featured role in a play, Jordan E. Cooper for Ain't No Mo. He also wrote the play.
Oh, okay.
Samuel L. Jackson, August Wilson's The Piano Lesson, Arian Moyed, A Doll's House, Brandon Uranowitz for Leopold Stott, and David Zayas for Cost of Living. Mm. right. So I saw Brandon Uranowitz and David Zayas. Mm-hmm. I just want to, like, I won't belabor, but I do want to talk about David Zayas really quick.
Sure.
So the role he is playing is, so what Cost of Living is basically, you have individuals with disabilities and their caretakers.
Okay.
And so each story is like vastly different, right? And so in David Zayas's story, what happened is, he was married. His wife asked for a divorce. After they were like in the process of divorcing, she had a major accident and became a double amputee.
Oh, wow.
Now, he still loved her. She's the one who wanted the divorce. He didn't. Mm. So you watch like this dynamic play out where she's still very much like wants her independence, but it's also like this really difficult situation, but he does really still love her. So he does sort of end up like taking care of her. And
that sounds heart-wrenching.
Yeah. But like the two of them together, it was like I would also watch them in a comedy together because it was like, I mean, they were so great together.
Yeah. That's awesome.
So yeah, I'm really interested to see how this pans out, but I will say like David Zayas was really wonderful.
Okay.
All right. Best performance by an actress in a featured role in a play, Nikki Crawford, Fat Ham, Crystal Lucas Perry, Ain't No Mo, Miriam Silverman, The Sign in Cindy Brewstein's Window, Katie Sullivan, Cost of Living, Carrie Young, Cost of Living. Remember I said David Zayas and the woman playing his wife were like, bup, 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 bup. I'd watch him in a comedy. This Katie Sullivan is, that's her.
Okay.
And she is a double amputee.
Oh, okay.
Uh-huh. So like I said, all the actors are actually disabled actors. They're not actors pretending to have, right?
That's awesome.
So, and she was like biting and funny and dynamic and just, oh man, great. She was great. And
awesome.
Then Kara Young was the caretaker in the other situation. And so she, that dynamic was, what was interesting about that dynamic is that she had been struggling for quite some time to find work. She was living in her car. She was like trying to go to school and also like just like keep a roof over her head, which was a real struggle. Mm-hmm. And she'd had like several situations when people had done her wrong. Then she finally got this job caretaking for this young man who was like quite wealthy, who was disabled. Mm-hmm. And so you watch this like dynamic of privilege mm-hmm. pan out. And it's so fraught because it's like the person with money sort of manipulating and just also not understanding the situation that she's in.
Yeah.
As her, like she's taking care of him, but also that's her employer.
Right.
So that was a real sort of, like that was a real chess game to mm-hmm. kind of play that one. And she was great.
That's awesome.
Okay. Best performance by an actor in a featured role in a musical, Kevin Del Aguila, Some Like It Hot, Kevin Cahoon, Shucked, Justin Cooley, Kimberly Akimbo. He was adorable.
He's so good.
He was adorable. Oh my God.
From the very first line, I was like, oh, I love you. Oh, I love you. What was the line? It was, wait, let me think of it. Because the way that he said it, he goes, oh, that's my mom. And it was just like, oh, I love you. Like his idea of who his character was and how he portrayed him was so authentic, but also mm-hmm. so unique.
Yeah.
It was, his choices were just off the wall, but they totally made sense. He was so good.
He was really great. He was really great. And our mutual friend Abby Savage had gone to see Kimberly Akimbo before we did. And I distinctly remember her talking about him and like saying how much she loved him. And so then when we went to see it, I was like, this is exactly who she was talking about. And she's exactly right. He's wonderful.
Oh, I wanted to take him home with me. He was so sweet and like tuck him into bed and be like, you know.
So good.
He's sweet. Yeah.
And then
he was really good. And the way that they played off of each other too, it didn't seem awkward. It didn't seem unusual or creepy. It was so natural. Both of them together were so sweet.
Mm-hmm. It's true.
Because that could have gone sideways. Like there's so much 100%. That could have gone wrong.
100%.
Because you know, a 60-year-old woman playing against a romantic interest of a 16-year-old boy who might be like closer to his 20s.
Oh, but he is still, in his 20s. I know for sure. But
still, it's like he's so young to be playing against, you know, a woman that we know is older. Yeah. So it could have been very creepy and wrong, but it wasn't. It never went there. And it was so sweet. It was such a sweet story.
That was also a real chess game by the director.
Totally.
It's a real chess game.
And especially because you've also got this really dark storyline with, you know, murder and extortion, essentially, like you these you know, her family is not good people.
No, and also like she's gonna them. Like we believe she might die.
Yeah,
like she's,
well, she will, she is right dying.
She's on the eve of her 16th birthday, but she's gonna die, right? And so it does have, oh man,
but it has high stakes, but it's really still lighthearted. It's such a, you're right. It is a chess game. It's such a, like, and it's so interesting because now that we're talking about it, I'm finding even more dynamics to it that I didn't even see or consider when we were in the theater, that it's just like, oh my God. And then, you know, these high school students committed a felony and like, for costumes. And it's just like, oh gosh, I mean, but you're rooting for them. It's really an interesting show.
It really is. It was fun, even with all those dark themes. It's a very fun show. It's like, I don't, you know.
Truly, truly.
And then Jordan Donica, Lerner and Lowe's Camelot, and then Alex Newell for Chef.
Yes.
I mean, we've said enough about Alex. Best performance by an actress in a featured role in a musical, Julia Lester for Into the Woods, Ruthie Ann Miles for Sweeney Todd, the Demon Barber of Fleet Street, Bonnie Milligan, speaking of all the crimes committed by the children.
Yes.
For Kimberly Akimbo. And Natasha Yvette Williams for Some Like It Hot, and Betsy Wolfe for And Juliet.
This is the category that I saw on Instagram. Like, I just saw the pictures of the nominees and I texted you immediately and said, we got some big girl representation in the Tony Awards this year. And I am here for it.
Yes, we do. It's great. Mm-hmm. It's really great. And they're
that's
like,
that's going to be a hard category.
Yes, yeah. It will.
That's going to be a hard category.
That's like, that category to me is like right next to the actor in a leading play. Like it's like, I have no idea how that's going to go. And it's like, I haven't even seen all those musicals, but like those particular individuals, those actresses have like, they are constantly just shelling out a game work.
Yes.
And so I'm like, this is a tough category.
Yeah. Yeah. It is. That's going to be a good one. Mm-hmm. That'll be a fun one to keep your eye on.
It really will. It really will. I think
that was it. Cause now we're like in best scenic design and lighting and all of that, which is equally important, but you guys can check that out on TonyAwards.com.
Totally. And we're already like over an hour.
Right?
Oh, this is the only thing I want to just like be like say like anything about.
Yeah, hit me.
Is again, I haven't seen A Doll's House yet. I hope I do see it before it closes.
Yeah.
But Jamie Lloyd directed A Doll's House. And so here's the thing is like when you look at it, it looks like Ivo van Hove, right? Okay, which a lot of people don't love. But I saw Jamie Lloyd's Cyrano de Bergerac at BAM last spring. It was literally this time last year.
Was that the one with Peter Dinklage?
No.
No.
This is the one with James McAvoy.
Okay.
It was so great.
Yeah.
It was so great. Like he, so instead of it being... So he used, so the battles, instead of swords, he used words.
Oh.
Which is absolutely appropriate for the character, right?
Yes.
And so they would have mics and they would be doing their spoken word poetry and they would be moving like they were sword fighting.
Yes.
But it was just what their word. It was so cool.
Yeah.
And then... For and then for like the sound effects. So like most of you will hopefully know about like Cyrano de Bergerac, who's like a really intelligent wordsmith, is a real person, but also like an incredible soldier. Mm-hmm. So when you get towards the end of the story, there's a war that breaks out, and the way so it's like the whole direction that Jamie took was like it had like more of like an urban feel. And so, like I said, with words, it was spoken word and there weren't actual swords. It was fighting with words. And so you also had this beatboxer. Her name is, I follow her on Instagram now because I was like, this young woman is so amazing. And so instead of like usual sound effects for bombs and stuff like that, it was her beatboxing. I lost my mind. It was so good. And so the fact that like all I've heard about A Doll's House is that it's wonderful is I'm like, it's because yes, the actors, absolutely.
Yeah.
Harry Moy, Jessica Chastain, amazing. Yeah. But I was like, it looks like Ivo van Hove, but it's Jamie Lloyd and Jamie Lloyd, I think he's better.
Oh.
All
right.
A lot of people don't like Ivo because he does the same thing. And it's like, what is it useful? Like, you know what I mean? Jamie is like, he's actually he's making it more accessible for people.
Yeah.
Which is like really important. He makes these like classics very accessible. There's something really important about like the choice to have Amy Herzog like rewrite this play, like having it come from a doll's house, coming from a woman's perspective, right?
Totally. Oh, it's absolutely.
Like, right?
It should be from a woman's perspective.
Exactly, right? And it's like, that's the way that he thinks. Do you see what I'm saying? And like, that's why I just like wanted to give a moment because he's a British director, you know? And so it's like, you know, people aren't maybe going to know, and you're going to look at the poster and you're going to be like, that looks like an Ivo Van Hove piece. And if you don't love him, then like, but it's not him. It's Jamie Lloyd and it's different. And I'm telling you, you might actually like it. I haven't seen it yet, but like, I like his direction.
Nice.
That's it.
All right. Okay. Bye.
Thank you all for listening. Let me just say when the Tony Awards are. I mean, we should say that. Like, we should at least say that. The Tony Awards are on Sunday, June 11th. From 6:30 to 8, you can watch the, like, red carpet and, like, the technical awards and stuff on Pluto TV, which is, like, totally free. And Yeah, it's Pluto. I love that app. It's a free app. It's completely free. You don't have to sign in with an email address or anything.
Love it.
And then at 8 p.m., it's going to be on CBS, which, like, again, if you just have an antenna, you can watch it, or Paramount Plus if you have that. So it's much more accessible this year than, you know,
they listened.
They did.
Well, they had to, because they probably didn't have nearly as much viewership as they've had in previous years.
100%.
Just saying.
Wait a minute.
Thank you for listening to our podcast, Theater Geeks Anonymous. You can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at
TGABWay and on Facebook at Theater Geeks Anonymous.
Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to the Theater Geeks Anonymous podcast
on the Broadway Podcast Network and all your favorite podcast listening apps.
Your intermission-sode has now concluded.
Shut up, sit down, and turn off your cell phones. Or we'll tell Patti LuPone.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.
If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.